Well, it's good to be back. I don't know if you remember me. I was here about a year ago or so. I've been traveling around doing a lot of different parishes, and that whenever a priest is off on vacation or sick, I get the call. And I enjoy doing that. It's a chance to get around and see a lot of different churches and a chance to kind of see some of the kids I used to teach way back when I was at Trinity. So I'm here now, and I'm glad to be here now. It's a great, beautiful place to kind of worship in. You all know who Oprah Winfrey is? She had that very popular show several years ago, The Oprah Winfrey Show. My mom loved Oprah Winfrey. Every time I go to the house to kind of see her, visit her, and if the show was on, just sit here for a minute, let the show go on. So the visit wasn't much. She had to get through her Oprah Winfrey show. And Oprah Winfrey had a really popular show. And I guess it was popular because of the personality that she was, and also because she was such a great interviewer. She had remarkable guests, and she could get into the inside some of these people and pull out some great insights from their lives. And she was a remarkable kind of interviewer in that way. Whether they be politicians or whether they be movie stars or whatever, she had a great way of doing that. I remember, though, the most important thing people talk about Oprah Winfrey, when you come down to it, is the gifts she gave away. Remember those? She would give gifts for everybody. Just clamored to go to that audience because they couldn't wait to kind of get the gifts that she was going to give, whether it was a spring gift thing or whether it be a Christmas thing or whatever it is. But remember the time when she gave away a car to everyone? You get a car, you get a car, you get a car. I mean, that was astounding to hear about that. Everybody got a car who were there in the audience. They remember those gifts she used to give, many gifts that she gave. Well, I'll tell you, probably about 12 years ago, I had knee surgery, and I had to go in and get my knee fixed up. Believe it or not, I recuperated in a hospital for several days. And guess who I watched? Oprah Winfrey. And I watched it because I just wanted to escape a little bit and be entertained and all that stuff. Well, there's one particular show that I was just watching as I was sitting there grimacing through my pain, trying to get through this operation. She came on the air this one day and she said something like, "There will be no guests today. No guests today. No politicians, no movie stars. I'm not even giving away anything today." And you could hear this subtle murmur and groan in a room. You're like, "Oh my God, we missed out on this. You're not going to have any guests?" And then she went on to say, "Because today you are the guests. You are the guests. And we're all here to hear your story. So let's listen up." And no sooner did she say that, "Let's hear your story," it went quiet, mute. Nobody did anything. They just sat there, froze. And then all of a sudden, there was this older woman who boldly stood up and said, "Let me tell you about my story." And she went on and telling her story with a lot of emotion. And the people in the audience were really touched by it. And that boldness to stand up and tell her story in front of strangers emboldened others to stand up. And they told their story. And it triggered someone else to stand up and tell their story. And people were just telling their story so freely on this Oprah Winfrey show. And when you begin to realize in the story is that even though there were circumstances that changed and everybody had their own unique little story, there was something that bonded them together. There was a similarity between every one of the stories. They were all coming out of pain and hurt. Near the end of the show there, one woman got up and she said, "You know, I honestly came here to be entertained. And I came here to kind of possibly win a car. And I tried to get all the gifts that you were going to give. But something happened today. I was touched by all of you, strangers, who had the courage to share their story. And then she ended, I walked away with the best gift I could ever have. I walked away with you. And that was a powerful statement. They were just people telling their stories. And if you want to hear a story, let me tell you mine. And there's something beautiful about us having the freedom to tell our story. And there's not one person in this church here who does not have a story to tell. The difficulty is many of us feel uncomfortable sharing our story. Or we feel like we're not worthy enough to share our story. So we usually keep mute. Let someone else do it. Human stories and human struggle releases us a lot. It pushes us up and outward. It empowers us to be able to see that we can seek out healing and hurt with our own story. It didn't take much to see that the readings we had today started off with a story in the Old Testament of a man who had a story to tell. And that story that he told came out of grief and pain and hurt. His name was Elijah, one of the great prophets who lived 900 years before Christ even showed up. And he was a faith-filled person who tried to help people see the goodness of a God beyond them. He was dealing with a lot of people in the cities and the country who just did not want to hear anything about a God. They were into their own pagan gods. But he astounded a lot of people, and he got a lot of people to follow him until he ran across the queen who was upset at him. And she wanted to have him killed. Wanted to remove the problem. So she shouted out orders for people to kind of find him and extinguish him. Elijah just kind of ran, terrified, disturbed. How could his life turn around so poorly? And when he ran away, we pick up the first reading today as to what happened to him on that journey in that desert, in that wilderness, running from, scared to death, depressed, can't deal with any more hurt and pain. And as he ran through the desert, exhausted and tired, probably not just from the running in the desert and the heat, but probably because stress was just weighing him down. My life is falling apart. As we hear in that first reading, what he wanted to do was just to sit and rest and just pass away gently. My life has no meaning. That's all he really wanted. And the story we read today is that he goes off and he does that, and out of exhaustion, he rests under a broom tree. I don't know about your knowledge of broom trees, but broom tree is kind of a basic shrub that you see out in wilderness and that. It's a short shrub. It only gets about 10 feet tall, but it has just enough shade that you can scoot yourself in it. One man could just sit there and get out of the heat of the sun. So there, Elijah is trying to get under the shaded tree just to provide some relief. That broom tree you see in scriptures a lot, and it talks about that's the place where people would go and quit. It's a place where people would just feel like it's not worth going on anymore. And that broom tree became a symbol of despair, helplessness. And your desire is just to quit and give up. Enough is enough. But something happened under that broom tree. Because in that broom tree, while he was exhausted and sleeping, it says an angel of the Lord came. And look what he said. That angel touched him. He didn't say anything first. He just touched him. He connected with him. And that angel woke up. And he saw there was bread and food there under this tree. And he said, eat some bread and food. Get some nourishment inside of you. And the man sat there, Elijah, and ate that bread and that food that was under that tree. And then he turned over and fell asleep again. But the angel touched him again. To get up and eat your fill. Fill yourself up. Nourish yourself. Because I want you to get up and out under this tree. And get back there into the world. Sure, you had pain and you had hurt and you struggled. But you get back there again. That was God talking through that angel. And every one of us, by the way, no matter where we are in our life, we have those angels that come into our life and push us, and touch us. Let's get back again. It's not over. Don't quit. Thank God for those angels who do that to us. Thank God who really will not quit on us, even though we might quit on him. And that story of Elijah spoke the truth that all of us need to hear today. Because so many of us just want to quit sometimes. We've all been there. I've been there. You've been there. Spouses want to quit on each other because things aren't going right. Kids want to quit on school because they can't stand the bullying that's going on. Relationships quit on each other because someone hurt me. We quit on our job. We quit on our church. We even quit on God. You're not there handing out those free cars anymore. It's very real what is said today. But there's more than that first reading. You begin to see that there's something more that God is trying to tell us here. And the gospel gives us insight. If you're really, really willing to look inside that gospel, we can stay on the surface and we can talk about the things that they murmured about in the readings. Remember all the apostles and the people that followed Jesus, they murmured when he said, I'm the bread of life. They couldn't comprehend it. It was too much of an intellectual gymnastics going on in their head. I know who you are. I know where you came from. And they murmured and grumbled because we can't figure it out. But near the end of that reading, did you hear what he said? Just take and taste. And that's the essence of it. We just don't know how to taste it anymore. We're so quick to kind of say, I don't like it anymore. It's like when you were a kid and you had broccoli. Mom would sit there and say, this is good for you, eat it. And you go, it doesn't look good, I don't like it, and you don't eat it. But then she might doctor it up another way and say, just taste this. Taste it. You got to allow yourself to taste it. That's Christ himself. You don't have to figure out how he is in this bread and how he is in this wine. That's too much of us to any of us comprehend. But get to the human level of it and just taste it. Let it be a part of you. Let it consume you. Be nourished by it. Find the strength to get up out of your broom tree and get back into the game. Christ is saying, I'm with you. I'm walking with you. I think we just don't have the understanding of the power of what it means to taste. We see it in the response today. Taste and see the goodness of the Lord. I think it's fascinating when we hold that Eucharist up and that wine up. Look at the way we say it. We don't sit there and say, here's the body of Christ, now come and taste it. No, we say, come, taste it. This is my body. Get in touch with it. Let your lips touch it. Fill your soul with it. And He will not allow you to quit or give up, even though all those other things out there in this world will challenge you to give it up and quit. It's not worth this. To be honest with you, that's the first time I've ever been to Rome. I've been to Europe, I've been all over the place, but I never went to Rome. You would think a priest would be in Rome. They send us over there to study a lot, but I never got the chance to go over there. So I went, 70 years of age, for the first time to Rome. And I did like everybody else does when they go over there. You want to see our faith tradition. You want to see what's our strength, what really makes this church work, and see what it's about. And you see these magnificent churches, and you see things that you can't imagine that the man has created through the artistry and the creativity of paintings and sculptures. And being an artist myself, I get intrigued with that. I just sit there and can watch and gaze at a painting or touch a marble statue. And something happens. There's a turning point with all of us. And it was like that for me over there. Because I went in like everybody else to go to the Sistine Chapel. The very famous Sistine Chapel. It's no bigger than maybe this room right here. But it's 68 feet tall. That's tall. And to fill that space up there, they put these remarkable paintings around. The famous one is Michelangelo. You know the one? Where he has this picture called The Creation of Adam, and you see God touching and reaching out to man, Adam. And I was like hundreds who stood under this room, under this ceiling, and looked up there. And there were so different many people, every nationality in that, but we all sat there and gazed. And you couldn't help but just focus in on that one image of God touching man. But then something happened the more I looked at that painting. Let me show you what I mean. I was so touched at a distance that I wanted to see it up close. Is the mic not on? Is it on? Mic on? There you go. It didn't work the last mass up. But I got so fascinated by watching that. And you can see, even at that distance of 68 feet, you can see there is that distance between God's fingertip and man's hand. It's not there yet. And it was found in that painting, and I sat there and looked at it, that I wanted to get that up-close look, and so I did. I bought the painting that they had there, just the area of the hands. And you've seen this before. I know you have. But when you stop and gaze at this painting, you begin to see there's something here that we need to see. There's more than just the touch. Are my mics working there? And the more I began to look at it, you see that The hand of man is over here. The hand of God is right here. I don't know if y'all can see it. That's the hand of God. The interesting thing about it, they're on the same level. You would think that God's up here pointing down to man, trying to reach us. No, he's on the same level as us. But the interesting thing about God in this picture is he is stretching. His finger is stretching so much to get in touch with man. And then you look at man and how he reaches. He's kind of casually sitting back, and his knee is up, and his hand is resting on it. And if you look at his hand, it's this way. It's not him trying to reach and connect. He's sitting there waiting for God to touch him. And it hit me. Why don't we touch back? Why do we sit there with our hand like this, expecting God to take care of us? We got to get out of our broom trees, and we got to start reaching out and nourish ourselves to get up there and start reaching again. If he only had his hand turned this way to receive, but he had it this way, you take care of me. The turning point in every one of our lives is not that God touches me, but I get up and touch him back. And that's what this painting did. When am I going to start touching him back? When am I going to make the effort of tasting him and holding him and consuming him inside my fiber, when he can nourish me and give me the life that I need, that I won't stay around a broom tree anymore? This is the power of the Eucharist. And it starts with us learning just to how to touch each other and taste this Christ of ours. It comes down to telling our story and making sure that our story has merit and value because we can taste where God is in our story. And we can begin to start reaching and connecting that little distance between the two. That's all that God wants us to do. He will stretch as hard as he can. And all we have to do is reach back. We do it whenever we come and receive the Eucharist at a Mass every day. He's constantly reaching to us. And where are we as we reach out? The power of stories. The power of a Christ who wants to consume his presence within us. Taste and see. Taste